Welcome to the Baird Group Corporate Restructuring Review for November 2011, brought to you by the editors of the Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. In this month's Corporate Restructuring Review, we'll discuss five topics. First, last month's largest Chapter 11 filing and other statistics. Second, large Chapter 11 filing TCR editors anticipate in the near term. Third, a quick review of the major pending disputes in Chapter 11 cases that we monitor day by day. And fourth, reminders about debtors whose emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed. And fifth, information you are unlikely to find elsewhere about new publicly traded securities being issued by Chapter 11 debtors. Now, let's review the latest Chapter 11 cases in November 2011. Danilo Munoz reports that the number of $100 million Chapter 11 bankruptcy cases dropped a couple of notches in November, but remains high so far this year. Eight companies filed, two below the total mega filings in October. However, three of these eight cases involved companies with assets in excess of $1 billion. For the first 11 months of 2011, 82 companies with assets of at least $100 million have filed for Chapter 11. For fiscal year 2010, there were a total of 105 mega cases, or an average of about 9 per month. The $4 billion bankruptcies in November are AMR Corp. and its American Airlines unit, Dingy Holdings LLC, and General Maritime Corp. in that order. AMR and Dingy are the second and third largest Chapter 11 filings so far this year, respectively just behind MF Global Holdings Limited, which filed at the end of October. Another notable case is Jefferson County, Alabama, which sought creditor protection under Chapter 9 of the Bankruptcy Code, listing more than $1 billion in assets and debts. During the first 11 months of 2011, a total of eight companies with assets in excess of $1 billion sought Chapter 11 protection. Other billion-dollar bankruptcies this year are those of MF Global Holding Incorporated, NewPage Corporation, Border Group, and MSR Resort Golf Course. AMR Corporation and its debtor affiliates filed for joint Chapter 11 protection on November 29, 2011, with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of New York in Manhattan before Judge Sean H. Lane. The company's balance sheet at September 30, 2011, showed $24.7 billion in total assets, $29.5 billion in total liabilities, and a $4.8 billion stockholder deficit. AMR, American Airlines unit, is the third largest airline in the United States. AMR sought bankruptcy protection after failing to secure cost-cutting labor agreements. AMR, previously the world's largest airline prior to mergers with other airlines, is the last of the so-called U.S. legacy airlines to seek court protection from creditors. American Airlines, American Eagle, and the American Connection Carrier serve 260 airports in more than 50 countries and territories with an average of more than 3,300 daily flights. The combined network fleet numbers more than 900 aircraft. November's second largest Chapter 11 case by Dingy Holdings LLC and four other affiliates of Dingy Incorporated is also before the Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of New York. Parent Dingy Incorporated is not part of the filing. Dingy Holdings filed in order to implement an agreement with the group of investors holding more than $1.4 billion of senior notes issued by Holdings, regarding a framework for the consensual restructuring of more than $4 billion of obligations owed by Holdings. Dingy Holdings disclosed assets of $13.7 billion and debt of $6.18 billion. The Chapter 11 filing also aims to address the burdensome lease obligations at Holdings Rosetone and Danskamer facilities. On December 7th, Dingy Incorporated and Dingy Holdings LLC delivered to the Bankruptcy Court a Chapter 11 plan of reorganization and the accompanying disclosure statement for Dingy Holdings. The plan addresses claims against and interest in Holdings only and does not address claims against and interest in the other debtors. Dingy Northeast Generation Incorporated, Hudson Power LLC, Dingy Danskammer LLC, and Dingy Rosetone LLC. The Holdings Plan provides for the treatment and satisfaction of all claims against Holding, including its senior and subordinate notes and its guarantee of its Rosetone and Danskammer lease obligations. Dingy said, if confirmed by the court, the proposed Holding Plan will settle all pending and potential causes of action related to Dingy's out-of-court restructuring effort and will materially reduce the debt on its consolidated balance sheet. The third largest Chapter 11 filing was by General Maritime Corporation and its affiliates, also before the Manhattan Bankruptcy Court on November 17th. General Maritime disclosed $1.72 billion in assets and $1.41 billion in liability as of September 30, 2011. New York-based General Maritime, through its subsidiaries, provides international transportation services of seaborne crude oil and petroleum products. It is the second largest U.S. owner of oil tankers. Its fleet is comprised of VLCC, Suezmax, Aframax, Panamax, and product carrier vessels. The fleet consists of 30 owned vessels and 3 chartered vessels. General Maritime is seeking court approval of bidding procedures in connection with the potential auction and sale of substantially all of the debtor's assets. Meanwhile, Jefferson County's Chapter 11 bankruptcy represents the largest municipal debt adjustment of all time. Jefferson County, home to the Birmingham, Alabama, the state's most populous city, filed for Chapter 9 with the bankruptcy court for the Northern District of Alabama to address the long-term debt of $4.23 billion, including about $3.1 billion in defaulted sewer bonds, where the debt holders can look only to the sewer system for payment. The county said it would use the bankruptcy court to put a value on the sewer system, in the process fixing the amount of bondholders should be paid through Chapter 9. Other large Chapter 11 filings were also filed by Sargent Ranch LLC, PMI Group Incorporated, Claire at Water Tower, SP Newsprint Holdings LLC, and Trailer Bridge Incorporated. Sargent Ranch filed for Chapter 11 protection on November 18, 2011, with the Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of California in San Diego, before Judge Laura S. Taylor. The company listed estimated assets of $500 million to $1 billion and estimated debts of $50 million to $100 million. The PMI Group is an insurance holding company. Through its principal regulated subsidiary, PMI Mortgage Insurance Company, and its affiliated companies, the debtor provides residential mortgage insurance in the United States. The PMI Group filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy with the Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware on November 23rd, listing total assets of $225 million and a total debt of $735 million. Another mega case, the Claire at Water Tower, is an upscale 334-unit high-rise continuing care retirement community in Chicago, Illinois. The Claire filed for Chapter 11 protection with the Bankruptcy Court for the Northern District of Illinois on November 14th after defaulting on $229 million in tax-exempt bond financing used to build the project. The Claire estimated $100 million to $500 million in assets and debts. SP Newsprint Holding and 3 affiliates filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy with the Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware on November 15th. In its petition, SP Newsprint Holding estimated $100 million to $500 million in assets and debts. SP Newsprint is one of the largest producers of newsprint in North America. SP Recycling Corporation, a Georgia corporation, and the debtor's other operating company was established in 1980 as a means for SP to secure a ready supply of recycled fiber, a key raw material for its newsprint. Trailer Bridge, meanwhile, provides integrated trucking and marine freight services to and from all points in the lower 48 states and Puerto Rico, as well as the Dominican Republic. Trailer Bitch filed a voluntary Chapter 11 petition with the bankruptcy court for the District of Middle District of Florida on November 16th, one day after its $82.5 million 9.25% senior secured notes became due. In its petition, the debtor estimated $100 million to $500 million in assets and debts. There was no prepackaged Chapter 11 mega cases for November. In fact, the number of prepackaged bankruptcy filing is on the decline in the past few months compared to last year. Only one prepackaged mega Chapter 11 was commenced for the past 4 months. For the first 11 months of 2011, 11 of the 82 mega cases involved a prepackaged filing, or 13%. For fiscal year 2010, a total of 35 prepacks, prearranged cases were filed, about one every three filings in 2010. Of the mega cases for November, three were engaged in transportation, American Airlines, General Maritime, and Trailer Bridge. The rest were spread evenly throughout other industries. Of the November mega cases, the three filed with the Southern District of New York, two were filed with Delaware, and the rest were spread out through other bankruptcy courts. However, the top three bankruptcies for November all filed for Chapter 11 with the bankruptcy court for the Southern District of New York. Lehman Brothers Holding Corporation remains the biggest corporate bust in history. Lehman, which filed in 2008, had $639 billion in total assets, $613 billion in total debts at the time of its filing. For the first 10 months of 2011, the largest Chapter 11 filing was filed by MF Global Holding Limited and its affiliates. As of September 30th, MF Global had $41 billion in total assets and $39.6 billion in total liabilities. Now, let's turn to the topic of large Chapter 11 filings troubled company reporter editors anticipate in the near term. Carlos Fernandez identified five companies that may be close to filing for bankruptcy. These are Fiber Tower, Aqualex Holdings, Simmons Food, Bank Atlantic Bank Corp., and Eastman Kodak. Fiber Tower missed a $1.3 million semi-annual interest payment due November 15, 2011, with respect to its 9% convertible senior secured notes due 2012. The indenture governing the 2012 notes provides that the failure to make such a payment constitutes an evidence of default after a 30-day cure period. The missed interest payment will not trigger any significant cross-default provisions associated with other outstanding Fiber Tower debt prior to the expiration of the cure period. During the cure period, Fiber Tower will continue to evaluate different options to manage its debt load. John Kelly, the chairman of the company's board of directors and fellow director, Phil Kelly, resigned from the board on November 14th. Director Randall Hack stepped down the next day. During the third quarter, 2011, Fiber Tower conducted an assessment of the fair value of its Federal Communications Commission license and concluded that the fair value of the license was less than the carrying value. The company estimates the impairment charges for these assets to be in the range of $158 million to $170 million in the third quarter of 2011, which would reduce the carrying value of the SEC license to somewhere in the range of $87 million to $129 million at September 30, 2011. Fiber Tower is a backhaul and access service provider focused primarily on wireless carrier market. Aqualex Holding LLC reached an agreement for $15 million in incremental debt financing from a group of senior note holders led by affiliates of Centerbridge Partners LP. The company said the investment represents an important first milestone in the company's financial restructuring process and increases the liquidity to $33.5 million when coupled with its existing cash on hand of $18.5 million as of November 14, 2011. The additional liquidity, which is being provided pursuant to a second lien senior secured credit facility, will help ensure that Aqualex operation continues in normal course. CEO Bill Varner said Aqualex continues to engage in active and constructive negotiation with lenders and senior note holders regarding a consensual balance sheet restructuring. In connection with the financing agreement, Aqualex's lenders have agreed to extend a forbearance agreement from December 8, 2011 to February 3, 2012. The majority of the company's senior note holders have agreed to forbear from taking any legal action if the company determines not to pay a $12.5 million interest payment on the company's senior notes due December 15, 2011. The company anticipates that it will reach an agreement in principle on terms of the financial restructuring by December 15th. Aqualex expects the cornerstones of the restructuring to include a substantial new equity investment by senior note holders, which will provide additional liquidity for working capital purposes and a significant paydown of the company's secured debt. Aqualex expects that as part of the restructuring, the company's senior notes would be exchanged for common equity of the company's pursuant to an out-of-court restructuring or voluntary filing under Chapter 11 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code, which the company currently expects would be a prepackaged bankruptcy filing. As part of the closing on the transaction, the company expects the affiliates of the Centerbridge Partners LP would become the controlling shareholder of Aqualex. Rothschild Incorporated is acting as financial advisor and investment banker, and Richards, Layton & Finger is acting as legal advisor to Aqualex in connection with its restructuring. Alvarez & Marsal is acting as restructuring advisor to the company. Standard & Poor's Rating Services in November lowered its corporate credit rating on Aqualex holdings from to CC from CCC minus, and placed the ratings on credit watch with negative implications. The ratings action reflect Aqualex's weak liquidity, the company's breached its financial covenants in third quarter of 2011, and we believe it's likely to do so again in the fourth quarter, said Standard & Poor's credit analyst Jim Sihan. While we recognize that the forbearance agreement provides Aqualex with some additional time to negotiate a longer-term solution with its lenders and note holders, and that the company's cash balance can support its near-term operational needs, we also believe that it is likely to undergo a financial restructuring and payment default. Based on Aqualex's public filings, we believe there is an increased likelihood that the company will not make its semi-annual interest payment on its 11.125% senior notes on its due date of December 15, 2011. The company reported a net loss of $298 million on $327 million of revenue for the 9 months ended September 30, 2011, compared with its net loss of $27 million on $324 million of revenues for the same period a year ago. The company's balance sheet at September 30, 2011 showed $400 million in total assets, $505 million in total liabilities, and a $105 million total deficit. Standard & Poor's Rating Services November lowered its ratings on Siloam, Arkansas-based Simons Food Incorporated, including its corporate credit rating to CCC from B-. The downgrade reflects the company's poor operating performance and inability to comply with covenants in its credit facility. Although the company is in technical default of its covenants, this does not constitute a default for our criteria because the company has not defaulted on any interest or principal payments, nor has it filed for bankruptcy protection or proposed a distressed exchange for any of its outstanding debt obligations, said Standard & Poor's credit analyst Christopher Johnson. Moody's Investment Service also issued a similar downgrade, cutting its corporate family rating and the probability of default rating on Simons Food to CAA1 from B2. Moody's ratings action comes after Simons reported weak third quarter operating performance and disclosed that it is in default of two financial covenants under its $225 million senior secured bank facility. The company currently is being permitted to access to its revolving credit agreement by its lenders and is in discussions to obtain forbearance for its financial covenant breach agreement and ultimately a waiver and amendment to its credit facilities. This is the second time in 6 months Simons has sought covenant relief from its banks. The company entered into a forbearance agreement in June and subsequent amendment in July after it failed to meet financial covenant. Simons debt capital includes a $125 million first lien secured bank revolving credit line. $83 million was drawn at the end of the third quarter, a $100 million first lien secured bank term loan, and $265 million of 10.5% second lien senior secured notes, a $13.9 million semi-annual interest payment on the notes was made after the end of the third quarter. Simons has struggled with financial leverage since its $230 million acquisition of wet pet food maker Menu Foods in November 2010. Simons Food, headquartered in Siloam Springs, Arkansas, is one of the leading vertical integrated poultry processors and a large private label pet food producer in the United States. The company operates in three primary business groups: poultry, pet food, and other, which includes its rendering operations. The company is principally owned and controlled by members of the Simons family. Net sales reported for the 12-month period ending July 2, 2011 was roughly $1.2 billion. Bank Atlantic Bancorp Incorporated, the bank holding company and parent of Bank Atlantic, on November 23, 2011, received notice of default from Wilmington Trust Company, the trustee under the bank holding company's junior subordinate debentures relating to the trust preferred securities of BBC Capital Trust II, BBX Capital Trust IIA, and BBC Capital Trust IV. The notice advised company that Wilmington Trust believes an evidence of default has occurred under the indentures in connection with the proposed sale of Bank Atlantic stock to BB&T Corporation pursuant to November 1st stock purchase agreement. On November 28, 2011, punitive holders of the direct and indirect interest in trust preferred securities issued by four trust sponsors by Bank Atlantic sued the company, and BB&T alleged that the proposed sale violates provisions contained in the indentures. Bank Atlantic also announced that it entered into a cease and desist order with the Office of Thrift Supervision at both the bank and the holding company level. The holding company reported a net loss of $11.28 million on $110 million of total interest income for the 9 months ended September 30, 2011, compared with a net loss of $96 million on $135 million of total interest income for the same period a year ago. The company's balance sheet on September 30, 2011 showed $3.74 billion in total assets, $3.73 billion in total liabilities. The Wall Street Journal, citing people familiar with the matter, reported that Eastman Kodak Company has hired Sullivan and Cromwell, replacing Jones Day, to advise the company on ways to rework its finances. Jones Day was hired earlier this year. A person familiar with the situation told WSJ that FTI Consulting Incorporated, another of Kodak's restructuring advisors, had been aggressively identifying pieces of Kodak's operations and assets to shed. Kodak is currently shopping around its online photo sharing and printing business, Kodak Gallery. It's hoping to fetch hundreds of millions of dollars for it, another person said. Headquartered in Rochester, New York, Eastman Kodak provides imaging technology products and services to the photographic and graphic communications market. Kodak's balance sheet as of September 30, 2011, showed $5.10 billion in total assets, $6.75 billion in total liabilities, and a $1.65 billion total deficit. Kodak had sales of $7.2 billion last year. Sales declined by 24% since 2008. The net loss last year was $687 million during the first 9 months of the year. The net loss was $647 million on sales of $4.27 billion. In July 2011, the company announced that it is exploring strategic alternatives, including a potential sale related to its digital imaging patent portfolios. Kodak denied rumors it was filing for bankruptcy. A group of Kodak bondholders have formed an informal committee and hired law firm Aiken, Gump, Strauss, Hauer, and Feld, LLP, for advice. In addition to the challenged companies mentioned in Mr. Fernandez's report, the troubled company reporter provides ongoing reporting about more than 3,000 companies experiencing financial distress or restructuring their balance sheet in a judicial proceeding. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Next, we'll quickly review major pending disputes in four large Chapter 11 cases that troubled company reporter editors monitor day by day. Ivy Magdalaro identified two major disputes pending in the Lehman Brothers case, one with the London-based Barclays PLC and the other with New York-based J.P. Morgan Chase. Appeals challenging Judge James M. Peck's orders in the $3 billion asset fight between Lehman Brothers and Barclays remain pending. The appeals and cross-appeals both deal with the contract for the sale of Lehman Brokerage business to Barclays in September 2008. In February, Judge Peck awarded the trustee overseeing the remaining assets of the Lehman's Brokers business $2.05 billion from Barclays on account of the so-called margin assets. The judge also ordered the Lehman trustee to pay Barclays more than $1.1 billion on account of so-called clearance assets. Barclays and Lehman trustees both contend that the other was entitled to nothing while the amount each was awarded should have been more. The parties filed for the first briefs in the appeal in late October. Another set of briefs are due on December 23rd, and the last batch of briefs are due February 10th next year. The appeals are expected to be decided by Judge Richard J. Howell of the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York no earlier than February. But even as Lehman earlier said, it has dropped its fight on allegations of an $11 billion windfall that Barclays made in the deal. The failed investment bank continues its $8.6 billion fight with J.P. Morgan. Lehman sued J.P. Morgan in May 2010 for allegedly using information accessed in its role as Lehman's clearing bank to extract collateral from the failed bank. J.P. Morgan countersued that it was defrauded by Lehman's to extend billions in loans around the time of the failed bank's bankruptcy filing. J.P. Morgan has been trying to move the lawsuit by Lehman from bankruptcy court to the district court, saying that a bankruptcy judge can't rule on a matter at hand. J.P. Morgan cited the Supreme Court's ruling in the Stern v. Marshall case, which involved Anna Nicole Smith's inheritance battle. Lehman has opposed a venue transfer. On November 16th, J.P. Morgan defended before bankruptcy court the $6 billion in claims it filed against Lehman, as well as its own conduct in an $18 billion sale of Lehman collateral. J.P. Morgan said Lehman's strategy against it has become a tale of two lawsuits, in an effort to win one way or the other, J.P. Morgan said in a court filing. There is the lawsuit that Lehman filed in the bankruptcy court in which Lehman blames J.P. Morgan's for its bankruptcy filing. And then there is the imaginary lawsuit that Lehman chose not to file, where the goal is disallowance of J.P. Morgan's demand for payment of the money owed. Lehman's case against J.P. Morgan is slated for trial in 2012. Meanwhile, Blackstone Group LP and other named defendants filed court papers on November 1st to seek dismissal of $3 billion lawsuits filed against them by the litigation trust established under Extended Stay Incorporated's confirmed plan of reorganization. Hobart Truesdale, who administers the litigation trust created for extended stay creditors, sued Blackstone for allegedly siphoning more than $2 billion from the pre-bankruptcy sale of extended stay without regard as to how the hotel chain would operate after the deal. Blackstone sold the hotel chain in 2007 to an investment consortium led by David Lichtenstein, chairman of Lightstone Group LLC, through a $7.4 billion loan from Bear Stearns Commercial Mortgage Incorporated and two U.S. banks. Blackstone's lawyer, Daniel Donovan Esquire of Kirkland & Ellis, said the litigation trustee's claims against the Blackstone defendants should be dismissed as a matter of law. The lawyer argued that Section 546E of the Bankruptcy Code precludes the litigation trustee's so-called avoidance claims related to the 2007 sale. He added that neither the extended stay bankruptcy exit plan nor the litigation trust agreement authorizes Mr. Truesdale to bring a securities claim, and only the U.S. government can bring a fraudulent conveyance claim under the Federal Debt Collection Procedure Act. Furthermore, the lawyer asserted, the trustee failed to allege a fiduciary duty owned by the Blackstone defendants. Bank of America and 30 other defendants also filed motions to dismiss claims brought against them in lawsuits, arguing that the allegations are vague and conclusory. Judge James Polk will hold a hearing on February 29, 2012, to consider the motions to dismiss the lawsuits. Objections are due no later than December 23. In a related development, Line Trust Corporation Limited, Deuce Properties Limited, Square Mile Capital Management LLC, and Starwood Capital Group Global LP sought dismissal of two other lawsuits that were also filed by the litigation trustee in connection with 2007 sale. Line Trust et al. Argued that litigation trustee failed to provide any legal theory to support a determination of their liability. Moreover, the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York denied the litigation trustee's motion to withdraw reference of his lawsuits from the bankruptcy court to the district court. In a 41-page decision dated November 10th, Judge Shira Scheinlin said the bankruptcy court has been administering extended stays bankruptcy for more than 2 years, pointing out that judicial economy would be promoted by allowing the bankruptcy court, which is already familiar with the extensive record in this case, to initially adjudicate the lawsuits. Extended Stay operated more than 680 long-term lodging properties in 48 states. An investor group, which included Blackstone, bought the business through a Chapter 11 plan for $3.93 billion in cash. The plan was implemented in October 2010. Extended Stay's Chapter 11 petition in June 2009 listed assets of $7.1 billion against debt totaling $7.6 billion. In Washington Mutual Incorporated, a three-way settlement deal at the heart of WaMu's bankruptcy plan aimed at resolving billion-dollar lawsuits among WaMu, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corp., and J.P. Morgan Chase continues to hang in the balance as Judge Mary Walworth refuses to approve WaMu's plan twice. However, a WaMu attorney has said that a settlement of the disputes that held up confirmation of the $7 billion Chapter 11 plan could be reached as early as December 12th. The involved parties are currently in mediation sessions with Judge Raymond Lyons. Brian Rosen, Esquire of Wheel, Gotchel and Manges, said there is no deal yet, but the company is working toward a settlement that would allow WaMu to put its Chapter 11 plan into effect by the end of February next year. WaMu is aiming for a mid-February third try at confirmation. The WaMu plan is based on the proposed settlement of lawsuits that pitted WaMu Incorporated, the FDIC, and J.P. Morgan against one another after the FDIC seized WaMu's Seattle-based flagship bank in 2008 and sold the WaMu Bank assets to J.P. Morgan for $1.9 billion. Under the proposed settlement, the lawsuit would be dismissed and billions in disputed assets would be distributed among WaMu, J.P. Morgan, and the FDIC. Common shareholders have consistently opposed the WaMu plan. Preferred shareholders, whose claims are worth as much as $7 billion, have taken the position that no deal with common shareholders can go through unless they are also included. Another key issue is in the case are allegations that major hedge funds engaged in insider trading during the WaMu bankruptcy case, capitalizing on their knowledge of the state of negotiations with J.P. Morgan and federal regulators. WaMu is the biggest bank failure in U.S. history, with the holding company listing $4.49 billion versus $7.83 billion in liabilities. December 8th marked the third anniversary of Tribune Company's bankruptcy filing. The case remains highly contentious and has taken longer than usual to resolve. There have been protracted negotiations and mediation efforts and numerous proposed plans of reorganization filed by Tribune and competing creditor groups. Many of the disputes among the creditors center on the 2007 leveraged buyout fraudulent conveyance claims, the resolution of which is a key issue on the bankruptcy case. Specifically, Tribune creditors filed formal lawsuits in late 2010 to hold Tribune executives and lenders at the time of the $13 billion buyout under Sam Zell's leadership accountable for any fraudulent transfers in the LBO. The suits have been stayed pending Tribune's effort to confirm a bankruptcy plan. Judge Kevin Carey has rejected two earlier versions of the bankruptcy plan for Tribune. The company gave it another shot and filed a third amended version of its bankruptcy plan November 18th. Tribune says the third amended plan contains an allocation dispute protocol that would allow the court to resolve potential creditor disputes on amounts that will be paid to various groups of creditors without interfering with the company's efforts to secure prompt confirmation of the plan. Tribune is pushing for a March 12th courtroom showdown over its Chapter 11 exit plan. Creditors have said the company can't walk away from continued fights over hundreds of millions of dollars. The Tribune is the second largest newspaper published in the U.S. It's listed $13 billion in debt and $7.6 billion in assets when it filed for bankruptcy protection on December 2008. It owns the Chicago Tribune, Los Angeles Times, six other newspapers, and 23 television stations. Julianne Lopez reports about four Chapter 11 debtors whose emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed: Lehman Brothers, Washington Mutual, Tribune Company, and Nebraska Book. Judge James Polk of the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of New York confirmed on December 6 the proposed Chapter 11 plan of Lehman Brothers Holdings Incorporated, which would enable Lehman to pay an estimated $65 billion to creditors. Plan approval sets the stage for creditors to start getting their money back early next year. At the hearing, Judge Peck said that while the company's bankruptcy speed up the financial crisis, it represents the most overwhelming outpouring of creditor consensus in the history of insolvency law. What a difference 3 years makes. The packed courtroom applauded after his remarks. Judge Peck said the overwhelming support from Lehman's creditor constituency is a huge achievement. The case was the most impossibly challenged bankruptcy ever, he said. The plan, which is supported by creditors holding about $450 billion in claims, was confirmed after the objection of one final creditor was overcome. In an emailed statement, Brian Marcell, Lehman's chief executive officer, said, "The case has required compromise and common sense, diligence and determination, and the reconciliation of complex positions that at times seemed irreconcilable. Confirmation of this plan is a testament to the enormous effort of the many stakeholders who recognize the value of an economic compromise plan and did yeoman's work to achieve it," said Marcell. Harvey Miller, a partner at Weil, Gotshal & Manges, LLP, and Lehman's lead bankruptcy counsel, said during the confirmation hearing that the company overcame almost insurmountable problems in resolving competing liquidation plans. Lehman hopes for its plan to be effective by the end of January. The company will continue to exist, however, as it still has pending litigation plus billions of dollars in assets, mostly in real estate. Mr. Marcell said he aims to raise $65 billion from Lehman assets in the next few years and will distribute some of the $23 billion to creditors in the first quarter. He estimated that the final claims will total $370 billion, giving the average creditor less than 18 cents on the dollar. Washington Mutual Incorporated hopes to resolve its three-year bankruptcy in February and may file an agreement stemming from ongoing mediation as soon as December 12th, the company's attorney said. After rejecting in September WaMu's second attempt to end its bankruptcy, Judge Mary Walrath, overseeing the case, ordered the parties into mediation to resolve objections. WaMu's attorney, Brian Rosen, said mediation continues nonstop. Mr. Rosen asked Judge Walrath to set aside January 11 for a disclosure statement hearing, which reviews documents that creditors will use to guide their vote to approve or reject a plan for reorganization. He said it might be possible to hold a February hearing to confirm the plan, which sets out how the company will pay about $7 billion to creditors. WaMu has languished in Chapter 11 bankruptcy since regulators seized its savings and loan in September of 2008 in the biggest bank failure in the United States history. WaMu's banking business was sold to J.P. Morgan Chase and Company immediately after being seized. In September, Judge Walrath rejected the company's second attempt to end its bankruptcy. She also found that the shareholders might have a claim that four hedge funds that negotiated WaMu's plan used information from the plan talks to profit on trades of the company's securities. However, Judge Walrath did not allow shareholders to pursue those insider trading claims pending mediation. WaMu's bankruptcy plan is unlikely to provide anything for the company's shareholders. The so-called DCL plan proponents proposed for of Tribune Company and its debtor affiliates, the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors, Oak Tree Capital Management LP, Angelo Gordon & Company LP, and J.P. Morgan Chase Bank North America, submitted to Judge Kevin J. Carey of the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware, a Third Amendment joint plan of reorganization and accompanying supplemental disclosure document dated November 18, 2011. The third amended plan includes modification that comply with the results and findings made by the court in the decision last month rejecting competing Chapter 11 plans. Tribune said the third amended plan contains an allocation dispute protocol that would allow the court to resolve potential inter-creditor disputes regarding amounts that will be paid to various groups of creditors without interfering with the company's efforts to secure prompt confirmation of the plan and the company's subsequent emergence from bankruptcy. Tribune's Chief Restructuring Officer David J. Liebentritt said the third amended plan provides that as a default, holders of the claims will receive the same distributions as provided under the debtor's second amended plan. However, in light of, among other things, the motions to reconsider the confirmation option filed by Aurelius Capital Management LP and other noteholders, the third amended plan provides that the court may A. reallocate distributions among the holders of senior noteholder claims, other parent claims, so-called EGI TRB LLC claims, and phones notes claims, or B. adjust the priority of distributions from the litigation trust or creditors trust if it concludes it is necessary to do so to ensure that the third amended plan satisfies the requirements of the bankruptcy code based on the resolution of certain disputes or if the relevant parties otherwise consensually resolve the allocation disputes. The third amendment incorporates the terms of a retiree claimant settlement that would include in the second amended plan subject, however, to any adjustments necessary in connection with the allocation dispute protocol. Judge Carey scheduled a November 22nd status hearing to find an expeditious and economic resolution to the debtors' Chapter 11 cases. Tribune marked its third-year anniversary in bankruptcy on December 8, 2011. James F. Conlin, Esquire, at Sidley Austin LLP in Chicago, Illinois, told Judge Carey that the debtors have been in bankruptcy too long and that the court admonished they must promptly find an exit door to this Chapter 11 proceeding. Mr. Conlin noted that in the confirmation opinion, the court found that the could be that exit door. The DCL plan proponents have therefore taken the court's admonishment to heart and have amended the DCL plan to eliminate the remaining obstacles to confirmation, Mr. Conlin said. The hearing to consider approval of Nebraska Book Company's reorganization plan previously postponed until December 19th, has been pushed back three more months to March 22nd. The voting deadline has been extended to March 13th. Nebraska Book prepared a prepackaged Chapter 11 plan that would swap some of the existing debt for new debt, cash, and new stock. The plan would have paid off first and second lien debt in full, while giving most of the new equity to subordinated note holders of the operating company and holders of notes issued by the holding company. Plan confirmation, however, has been delayed due to the company's inability to secure $250 million in outside financing. The company's exclusive period for proposing a plan is set to expire on January 23rd. Lincoln, Nebraska-based Nebraska Book Company Incorporated is one of the leading providers of new and used textbooks for college students in the United States. Nebraska Book and seven affiliates filed for separate Chapter 11 petitions on June 27, 2011 in Wilmington, Delaware, bankruptcy court. The Honorable Peter J. Walsh presides over the case. Lawyers at Kirkland & Ellis LLP and Pakluski, Stang, Zell, and Jones LLP serve as the debtor's bankruptcy counsel. The debtor's restructuring advisors are Alex Partners LLC. The investment bankers are Rothschild Incorporated. The auditors are Deloitte and Touche LLP. And the claim agent is Kurtzman Carson Consultants LLC. When it filed for bankruptcy, Nebraska Book listed consolidated assets of $656 million and debts of $563 million. J.P. Morgan Chase Bank North America, as administrative agent for DIP Lenders, is represented by lawyers at Richards, Layton, Finger, PA, and Simpson, Thatcher, and Bartlett LLP. J.P. Morgan Investment Management Incorporated, the DIP arranger, is represented by lawyers at Bayard, PA, and Wilkie, Farr, and Gallagher, LLP. An ad hoc committee of holders of more than 50% of the debtor's second lien notes is represented by lawyers at Brown, Rudnick. An ad hoc committee of holders of the debtor's 8.625% unsecured notes are represented by Milbank, Tweed, Hadley, and McCloy, LLP. The official committee of unsecured creditors selected Lowenstein Sadler LLP and Stevens and Lee PC as lawyers and Maestro Financial Incorporated as financial advisors. The Troubled Company Reporter provides detailed reporting about every Chapter 11 filing nationwide. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Psych Maricon Castilian reports about three companies that issued or will issue shares of new common stock upon emergence pursuant to the plans of reorganization they filed in their Chapter 11 cases. These are Local Insight Media Holdings, Incorporated, Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea and Company, and Sbarro's, Incorporated. Local Insight Media Holdings, Incorporated received an order from the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware confirming the company's plan of reorganization. The plan was declared effective and the company's emergence from bankruptcy on November 18th. Local Insight's plan is predicated on the notion that the company and creditors would win a lawsuit to avoid the lien on what's known as the Berry assets. The plan calls for giving new stock to the holders of the $339 million in secured claim. The disclosure statement says the lenders recovery will range between 20% and 28%. The holders of up to $7 million in what are known as regatta unsecured claims will take home 13% in cash. There is a long list of the classes being wiped out in their claims include LIM Finance 2, term loans $119.8 million, LIM Finance subordinate notes $80.7 million, and LIM Finance Term Loans, $138.1 million. Emergence from Chapter 11 was financed by a new $35 million loan. Existing first lien lenders were given the right to participate in the loan. Under the plan, Local Insight would emerge with a new credit facility and total debt reduced by more than 90%. The company's senior secured debt would be exchanged for equity in the reorganized company. The plan was supported by the steering committee of the company's pre-petition senior secured lenders. A separate bankruptcy plan for the Local Insight affiliate Carib Media calls for secured lenders owed $127 million to take ownership and receive a $55 million loan for a projected recovery of 77% to 93%. Subordinated note holders owed about $58.6 million are to receive nothing under the plan. Supermarket operator Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company proposed a restructuring plan based on a $490 million financing from an investor group that include Ron Burkle's Yakupa Costs and A&P will use the investment to pay creditors and exit bankruptcy, according to the plan filed with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court in White Plains, New York. The financing will be in the form of one $210 million face amount of privately placed new second lien notes, two $210 million face amounts of privately placed new convertible third lien notes, and three an $80 million new equity investment. The investment provides the best chances of reorganization successfully, the supermarket company said in court papers. Under the agreement, the investors will purchase new notes and shares and receive all the equity in the reorganized company. The financing will pay secured creditors in full and provide a $40 million cash pool for distribution of general unsecured creditors, according to the court filing. In the disclosure statement accompanying the plan, the company provided percentage recoveries only for some classes of creditors. Recovery for others were left blank. A&P hopes to emerge from bankruptcy early next year. The plan of reorganization for Sbarro's Incorporated and its domestic subsidiaries became effective, and the company has successfully emerged from Chapter 11 with significantly reduced debt and a new $35 million capital infusion. The reorganization plan eliminates more than 70% of the company's debt and provides access to $35 million in fresh capital from the company's new ownership group. Key terms of the plan include converting up to $35 million of loans outstanding under Sbarro's DIP facility into new first-out rollover term loans, which together with the new money term loans of up to $35 million will compromise the first-out exit term loan facilities of the reorganized company. Converting a portion of the petition first lien credit facility into a $75 million last-out exit term facility, and converting the remaining approximately $100 million in secured indebtedness outstanding under the pre-petition first lien credit facility into substantially all of the common equity of reorganized Sbarro, and lastly, eliminating all other outstanding debt. The exiting financing package provided by the first lien lenders allows the company to exit bankruptcy in the fourth quarter with significant cash interest coverage. As the company enters the fourth quarter, historically its busiest period, it expects to be able to generate positive cash flow before year-end, resulting in net leverage below $100 million and expected liquidity of approximately $40 million by the end of 2011. That ends the Baird Group Corporate Restructuring Review for November 2011, brought to you by the editors of the Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. If you'd like to receive the Troubled Company Reporter for 30 days at no cost and with no strings attached, call Nina Novak at 240-629-3300 or visit bankrupt.com/free trial and we'll add you to the distribution list. That telephone number again, 240-629-3300, and that web address, again, bankrupt.com/free trial. Tune in to our next monthly restructuring review on January 16th. Thank you and have a happy holiday.